WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. New developments in Georgia in the state election case that's ensnared former President Trump and 18 others.
Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee has ruled that Kenneth Chesborough and Sidney Powell will be tried together next month for their alleged role in conspiring to overturn Georgia's 2020 election results. Former President Donald Trump and 16 other co-defendants will be tried separately at a later time. McAfee says more severances are possible, but for right now, he has denied a motion to issue a stay on the proceedings pending a ruling from a federal judge. Jonathan O'Brien for CBS News, Atlanta.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said today nobody wins in a government shutdown, and he spoke about the challenge to his leadership from members of his own party.
I don't walk away from a battle. I knew changing Washington would not be easy. I knew people would fight or try to hold leverage for other things. I'm going to continue to just to focus on what's the right thing to do for the American people. And you know what? If it takes a fight, I'll have a fight.
Today, Congress is getting the latest on drug shortages.
Dr. Michael Gania with the American Society of Health System Pharmacists says this is a serious and ongoing problem.
99% of our respondents are struggling with drug shortages every day.
And while Congress is proposing a number of legislative fixes, Dr. Melissa Barber says they must not overlook one of the contributing factors.
One-third of generic active pharmaceutical ingredients produced for use in U.S. markets were manufactured by a single facility.
Also cited, natural disasters that can interrupt the supply chain and increased demand for vaccines and treatments like during COVID. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
The strike deadline's midnight tonight in Detroit as the United Auto Workers threatens job actions against the big three automakers if there's no new labor contract. General Motors Vice President Duncan Allred.
We've got a great team working to try and get an amicable solution.
UAW Chief Sean Fain.
We've repeatedly told the companies from day one, September 14th is a deadline, not a reference point. We will not allow the big three to continue dragging out negotiations for months.
People in parts of New England are keeping an eye on Hurricane Lee.
The hurricane's coming. It's pretty scary.
Pretty scary for him in Massachusetts, where coastal sections could face tropical storm conditions over the weekend. CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson says the storm will head toward eastern Maine.
Impacts out of this storm are going to be a lot more similar to what you'd get out of a nor'easter than necessarily a full hurricane. So New Englanders are used to preparing for that, and I think that's what you're really going to need to get your mind around.
And checking Wall Street, right now the Dow is up 265 points. NASDAQ is up 108. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Saluting. Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will resume performing abortions on Monday. Melissa Kay has more.
Clinics in Milwaukee and Madison are taking appointments starting today. Abortion services have been suspended in Wisconsin since last year's U.S. Supreme Court Dobbs decision. Planned Parenthood's decision is based on a Dane County judge's ruling in July that Wisconsin's 1849 law does not cover voluntary abortions. Michelle Velasquez is a lawyer for Planned Parenthood.
The court said unequivocally that Wisconsin statute 940.04 does not prohibit abortions and that it is a feticide statute.
Governor Evers issued a statement saying he will continue to fight for reproductive rights until the Dobbs decision is overturned. Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Republicans in the state Senate are set to fire Wisconsin's elections administrator today. Republican Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu says Megan Wolf ignored lawmakers and refused to testify at her confirmation hearing. But Wolf is likely staying put. Lawyers for the legislature and Attorney General Josh Call say lawmakers don't have the final say. Wolf's future at the Wisconsin Elections Commission will likely be decided in the courts. The state assembly today takes up a Republican bill to change the way Wisconsin draws its political maps. Democratic Minority Leader Greta Neubauer says the bill is a smokescreen.
This Republican proposal is merely a stunt to try to distract from what is going on underneath the surface, which is these ongoing threats to impeach Justice Protasiewicz.
Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says the bill he's introducing is based on the lauded Iowa model for drawing maps. But Iowa officials disagree. Rob Sand is Iowa's state auditor. He says Voss's bill lacks Iowa's checks and balances. Sand says the Wisconsin bill still gives state lawmakers the final say.
They can reject and reject and draw their own. You can't do that in Iowa. That's why the Iowa system works. If they have pulled that out, then you do not have the Iowa system in this bill.
In Iowa, the state Supreme Court has the final say over political maps. Governor Evers promises to veto the Wisconsin bill. Most Wisconsin Republicans in the U.S. House say they support an impeachment inquiry into President Biden. Here's Nate Wegehout.
The inquiry stems from accusations that Joe Biden's son Hunter used his father's influence to make business deals overseas. But while Wisconsin's GOP congressmen support an inquiry, they haven't yet signed off on full impeachment. Congressman Derek Van Orden said that he feels obligated to open an inquiry, but says he will wait to make a decision on impeachment until he sees more evidence. Only Congressman Mike Gallagher declined to immediately back the inquiry. Wisconsin's Democratic reps in D.C. blasted the announcement, with U.S. Representative Gwen Moore calling it pathetic. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
More students are attending University of Wisconsin schools this fall. Pete Schwabe has details.
Outside of Madison, first day of school numbers show a total enrollment of more than 161,000. That's 3% more than last year and higher for the first time since 2014. The number is based on first day registration figures and other projections for new students. The UW system is not counting Madison in the tally because there's a deliberate effort to lower enrollment there. Final enrollment figures are based on the 10th day of classes. Pete Schwabe, Civic Media News.
The best-tasting tap water in Wisconsin is in Janesville. That's according to judges with the American Waterworks Association. It's the second time in 5 years that Janesville has taken the top prize. Janesville water will now be a part of a national competition next year. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. The University of Wisconsin Systems has announced enrollment is on the rise, seeing a 3% increase in new freshman enrollment this school year. According to a press release, the University of Wisconsin Systems estimates an enrollment of 161,322 students for the fall 2023 semester. The increased enrollment marks the first time University of Wisconsin Systems has seen an enrollment increase since 2014. Campuses in Madison, Green Bay, Platteville, Stevens Point, and Whitewater saw increases. The Republican-controlled Wisconsin State Senate plans to vote to override three vetoes handed down by Governor Tony Evers, including the veto that increased school funding for the next 400 years. While Republican lawmakers have the supermajority needed in the state Senate to override the vetoes, they fall short of the supermajority needed to override a veto in the state assembly. The state Senate will also vote to override the governor's veto on a multi-billion dollar tax cut. Wisconsin health officials are urging residents to get updated COVID-19 vaccinations as confirmed cases begin to rise in the state. Officials say the new vaccine is more closely tailored to react to the form of the virus that is circulating now. While the cost of the updated vaccine is no longer covered by the federal government, the booster is covered by insurance, and those without insurance can register for programs that reimburse a pharmacy partner for the vaccine. Many pharmacies will also offer the booster to children for free, even without insurance. Another fatal crash occurred in Polk County this week. According to the Wisconsin State Patrol, two people were killed and three were injured on Wednesday after a crash in Polk County near Turtle Lake. The crash occurred around 5:30 in the evening on US 8 at 33rd Street. When authorities responded to the incident, they discovered a 92-year-old woman and a 66-year-old man had died from injuries sustained in the crash. The cause of the crash is under investigation. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Temperatures this morning plummeted into the low 30s in northern Wisconsin, prompting a frost advisory while patchy dense fog built in for portions of the state. Now, we are bright and beautiful under sunny skies as a high pressure hangs overhead. Temperatures will spike to the upper 70s in the western areas of the state, with mid-70s in central Wisconsin and upper 60s closer to Lake Michigan. With a south wind at 10 miles per hour, it's pumping in the more seasonable conditions and putting us back to near our average highs for this time of year. Tonight, temperatures drop to the upper 40s and 50s as clouds begin to roll back into northwest Wisconsin with our next system approaching. A low pressure targets Minnesota and drapes a cold front through the state, bringing showers and some storms for the weekend. Have a tremendous Thursday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers shut out again. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost to the Marlins 2-0 at AmFam Field. It's the 11th time this season the Brewers unable to score a run. 9 runners left on base. Trevor McGill got his first start for the Brewers with relief from Colin Ray and Bryce Wilson. Craig Counsell.
I mean, we pitched really well tonight for sure. Trevor did a nice job. Colin did a very nice job. So yeah, that certainly worked out good. And just overall, we pitched well tonight, 2 runs. It's Bryce Wilson, heck of a job again. So pitched well.
The series wrapping up this afternoon, Miami's Eurie Perez against Milwaukee's Adrian Hauser, first pitch at 1:10. NBA, Giannis Antetokounmpo repeating his comments. He wants to see a commitment to winning if he remains in Milwaukee. Giannis appearing on NBA Central.
I'm a Milwaukee Buck, but most importantly, I'm a winner. I want to win. I have to do whatever it takes for me to win. And if there's a better situation for me to win the Larry O'Brien, I have to take that better situation. As long as we play the right way and we all sacrifice for a common goal, I can see myself being a Milwaukee Bucks for the rest of my career. But the moment I feel like people are not committed as I am to get that golden pin in the back, I am not.
College football, Wisconsin running back Braylon Allen, not happy. He only got 7 carries in the Badgers' 31-22 loss to Washington State, head coach Luke Fickle.
It's not the same as it has been. And I think that's where we've all got to recognize that. I'm not saying it's right or it's better or whatever it is, but there's a flow to things, you know, and I think he's mature. He understands that. He's, you know, disappointed. He obviously wants to touch the ball a lot more and feels like, more than just selfishly, feels like he can be more of an impact. And I agree with him. He can be more of an impact, but, you know, the opportunities that we get, we've all got to take advantage of.
Women's volleyball, the number one ranked Badgers beat Marquette 3-1 at Fiserv Forum in front of over 17,000 fans. That set a new NCAA record for attendance at a women's volleyball match. NFL, the Packers head to Atlanta Sunday to play the Falcons. Wide receiver Christian Watson missed practice again, but spoke to reporters.
It's a hamstring strain, so I mean, you know, the body's going to take its natural course. No one's, you know, coming back from anything like that. You know, super quick. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, going the natural course. And, you know, whenever I feel 100% is, you know, when I'll be ready to go.
Aaron Jones also missing practice as well. Matt LaFleur on seeing Aaron Rodgers go down with that torn Achilles tendon on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I feel for him. And I knew when he went back down to the ground, it had to have been something serious because I've seen him play through so much.
Packers center Josh Myers.
I mean, he never, you know, he played through injuries here all the time, I feel like. I figured it was pretty bad right away.
Rodgers posting on Instagram he plans to return. Jordan Love.
I mean, I know him. He's a very competitive person. And I have no doubt that he'll be back and he'll kill it in recovery and, be back.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
He opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's joking how. Everybody's joking now.
DeVec.
Ramaswamy.
Cease and desist. Who would be worse? Mike Pence. I mean, Ron DeSantis trying to rap also would be wildly cringy.
Ron DeSantis trying to feel feelings is weird enough. I couldn't imagine him rapping.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
A little patchy fog possible this morning, but that should burn off by mid-morning. Otherwise, mostly sunny today. We'll get to 78 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, 58. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cooler with a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms and a high right around 70. Weekend looking good. Plenty of sunshine Saturday, Sunday with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with our Wisconsin Revolution, joined by Mr. Luke Mathers and Professor John Shelton for a Thursday edition of Office Hours. Gentlemen, how are we doing this Thursday afternoon?
Doing good, Will. Mr. Zahmer's on his way, hopefully, up to the woods where he can listen to us on several Civic. I don't know where in the North Woods he's going, but we got a ton of Civic Media radio stations up there. So on his travels, hopefully he's driving safely and listening to the program across either a local Civic Media station or on the Civic Media app. But thrilled to be on the board for you today.
I'm doing good too. Weather's great outside. I'm headed down to Madison tonight at the Labor Temple to give a talk on my book. If anybody wants to check that out, it's going to be 6 o'clock at the Madison Labor Temple. And just excited to be here today.
It's always fun to have you. It's always exciting when we're able to get an office hours session in the middle of the week to talk with Professor Shelton. And John, today I want to cover the UAW strikes, the big news of the week in the labor world. And I'm going to start over from a piece at the AP. UAW chief says offers from Detroit companies are inadequate, says union is ready to go on strike. With just over 24 hours left before a strike deadline, United Auto Workers President Sean Fain said Wednesday that offers from the companies aren't enough and the union is getting ready to strike. In an online address to union members, Fain said General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis have raised their initial wage offers but have rejected some of the union's other demands. Fain was quoted as saying, "We do not yet have offers on the table that reflect the sacrifices and contributions our members have made to these companies. To win, we're likely going to have to take action. We are preparing to strike these companies in a way they've never seen before." We covered it last week. Hot labor summer, baby. It is rolling into the fall because hot labor summer never ends. And John, I want to note that with this strike in particular, 97% of UAW's Big Three members voted to authorize the strike. That's out of 150,000 union workers at Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. 97%. That's not even to, you know, I could say the vast majority, and I believe that would be an understatement. This is near universal support from the 150,000 workers. We are seeing this movement growing across the country, and I am so, so, so excited to finally see the employees stepping up and being able to say, no, we've had enough.
Yeah, I mean, think about that number for a second, 97%. You'd be hard-pressed to find 97% of just about any group of people to agree on anything. Unless it's like people in Wisconsin understanding that the Bears will never be good. So
don't tell Hawk that.
That's about it. But no, much less 97% of the people, you know, who work for all three of these automakers saying that, you know, not just I want people to really think about what this strike vote represents. They're not just saying that they're condemning the rampant corporate greed when these companies are making billions of dollars and their CEOs are making exorbitant salaries that nobody deserves to make when there are people in this country who don't have
John. the big three made a combined $21 billion in profits in the first 6 months of 2023 alone, on top of the $250 billion in North American profits they've made over the last decade.
Exactly. So not only is this a vote to condemn that, this is a vote for these workers to say they are willing to risk their jobs. They're willing to walk out without pay, potential, the potential of having things happen to their health insurance benefits, those kinds of things, to put their own livelihoods and the livelihoods of their families on the line, because what they understand is that if they don't act now and that act collectively, that things will never change and these companies will continue to take more and more and more from them. And the other thing that's really important about this, you know, one of the big demands, often we think about unions and we think about, you know, what it is that they're asking for is more money, right? And everybody who basically who's not rich in this country deserves to make more money for their work. But this is a strike that's about something really, really important, a basic principle. Many of these auto companies have, all three of them actually, have implemented something called a two-tiered labor force. And what that means is that people who have been in the company for a longer period of time get paid higher wages, sometimes have better benefits to do the same work that people who are newer do, the same exact work. And so this is a strike in demanding an end to those two-tiered systems, as the UAW is. This is a strike that is truly built on solidarity. The idea that you have older workers who may be making more money, who are saying, "No, we have to do this so that everybody, so that the future for all of these workers is one that's sustainable, where they can have the same kind of livelihoods that we've had." And that just, you know, for me and hopefully y'all and people who are listening to this, you know, that just gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling, you know, because that's what the promise of American democracy and solidarity in the labor movement is all about. And how could anybody in the public oppose that idea that everybody deserves equal pay for equal work? So I think the vast majority of the American people, anybody who works for a living, certainly is going to be on the side of the UAW.
Well, and Professor Shelton, we do have some talking points at the national level discussing how big of an impact this could have on the economy, though. Like, you can't strike because think of the economy. Will had us queue up a little clip from Jake Tapper, CNN on the lead, the president of the UAWs, or excuse me, yes, the UAW union, Sean Fain, on Tapper's show. I want to share this clip because that was the specific question that came up on CNN just in the last day or so.
Analysts say a prolonged strike will push up auto prices and dramatically hurt the economy. Are you worried about either of those possibilities?
You know, it's amazing to me how analysts, when workers ask for their fair share, it's always the end of the world. And you know, no one, you know, the last 4 years in general, okay, in the last decade, these companies made $250 billion in profit. In the last 6 months alone, they made $21 billion in profit. In the last 4 years, the price of cars went up 30%. CEO pay went up 40%. No one said a word. No one had any complaints about that. But now, God forbid that workers actually ask for their fair share of equity in the fruits of the labor and the product they produce, and all of a sudden it's the end of the world. So, if the talking heads, the pundits, the companies want to say that, you know, if we strike, it can wreck the economy. It's not that we're going to wreck the economy. We're going to wreck their economy, the economy that only works for the billionaire class. It doesn't work for the working class.
And so that was the president, Sean Fain, president of UAW, on CNN this week, talking about how it is going to have an impact, but not necessarily the impact that everybody's framing it as. Your take on what Sean Fain had to say and your reaction.
Well, what he said is exactly right, Luke. And when you think about inflation, one of the basic things that we have lost sight of in this conversation about inflation in this country is that inflation comes from corporations raising their prices. Okay, that's where it comes from. And Sean Fain is exactly right. Why have we had inflation? It's because corporations have been raising prices so that they can rake in as much profit as possible, right? Then they know there's a little bit more demand in the economy because, God forbid, for a period of time, You know, people who were impoverished were getting checks from the federal government to you know, keep them out of poverty. And so there was a little more demand in the system. So they responded by raising their prices. And, you know, it's interesting to hear Sean Fain say this, and because there's a historical piece to this. You know, the UAW has been on the forefront, actually, for, you know, almost 100 years in understanding the connection between inflation and corporate profits. So in 1946, the UAW went on strike. And in 1946, the UAW was maybe the most social democratic, most progressive union, one of the most progressive in the country, right? And it was headed by Walter Reuther, who was a socialist, not a communist, but a socialist. And when Reuther was leading the UAW in a strike against General Motors in 1946, same situation, by the way, coming out of World War II, GM had made millions of dollars in profits. And, you know, workers were seeing their wages eroded by inflation. And what Reuther called for, and this was brilliant. He called for General Motors to open their books and for a wage increase for workers without raising the price of automobiles. And the reason that he called for that was because he knew how much profit GM was raking in and that they could afford to just give the workers a higher percentage of what they were making. And it wouldn't have to be inflationary. So Sean Fain's exactly right. These companies could easily say, we're going to give the workers what they deserve for making the products that actually are the reason why they have this company in the first place. There's no CEOs down on the assembly line. We could give them a fair share of what they deserve without raising prices. They could do that. They just choose not to do that because they want to make sure that they are continuing to increase their record profits and give enormous salaries to their executives.
And I like John that you noted that inflation has been driven by corporate greed, because that's something that many of us have been saying for years now throughout the pandemic. And the powers that be, a lot of the establishment journalists, let's say, have been taking the other approach to that. Well, turns out that we were correct, and a lot of these journalists are starting to recognize that after the fact. Even, you know, reading from a piece at NPR, profits contributed to less than a third of inflation was the initial thought. However, it was found out in 2021 that corporate profits accounted for nearly double that, about 60% of all inflation in the United States, meaning it was not costs driving inflation. It was corporate profits.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, again, look at the UAW, look at UPS, you know, look at those polls that we've talked about that show almost 2/3 of Americans support labor unions, including over half of Republicans and 88% of young people. You know, most people know in this country, they may not articulate it the way we just did, but they intuitively know who's to blame for this. And they intuitively know that the way that you do something about it is by banding together and making sure that you take a bigger share of what's being produced for the work that you're doing. They know that. The working people in this country know it. And by God, if we could have just a few politicians who understood that and helped mobilize and organize people, we could dramatically change things in this country and very rapidly, just like in the 1930s.
Well, and we know that hot labor summer has been the subject of a lot of office hours here with Professor John Shelton. And so we're getting the word out. We're going to hopefully get more people aware of what's going on with hot labor summer. If you've got a question for the professor, give us a call. Send us a text. The professor is in for office hours here on Town Call. You can listen across Civic Media. We're going to continue the conversation talking about hot labor summer, the history, and maybe some current events as well, along with a fantasy labor lock of the week, or whatever we're going to come up with the clever naming. This is Town Call. We are joined by Professor John Shelton. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We're going to be right back.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. A federal judge says two defendants in the Georgia election case will go on trial next month, ahead of former President Trump and 16 others. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
We went through recessions.
We expect to get 4 inches of rain across the city.
We went through recessions.
of what the prosecution's case looks like, in particular focusing on the fake elector scheme and then accessing the election machines in Georgia.
In less than 12 hours, United Auto Workers could strike Detroit's big three automakers. Tammy Patrick's with a UAW local that works at a Stellantis plant.
We went through recessions. We went through bankruptcies with this company, and they've taken and taken and taken, and we've never gotten anything back.
Hurricane Lee could bring bad conditions to coastal New England. Boston's mayor says,
we expect to get 4 inches of rain across the city with wind speeds of up to 30 miles per hour. Current projections have the storm arriving late on Friday evening and lasting through Saturday evening.
CBS News Brief, I'm Steve.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. A new outdoor exhibit is under construction at the Children's Museum of Eau Claire. According to a WQOW report, the museum is building a nest to give children a place to play outdoors with their parents and gives them the opportunity to learn and engage with nature. The project reportedly cost $50,000 and was funded through grants and donations. The exhibit is scheduled to open in the next few weeks. The University of Wisconsin Systems has announced enrollment is on the rise, seeing a 3% increase in new freshman enrollment this school year. According to a press release, the University of Wisconsin Systems estimates an enrollment of 161,322 students for the fall 2023 semester. The increase in enrollment marks the first time the University of Wisconsin Systems has seen an enrollment increase since 2014. Campuses in Madison, Green Bay, Platteville, Stevens Point, and Whitewater are the ones that saw increases. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. Call, text, or chat 988 to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. 988, here to support you. Sponsored by Wisconsin DHS.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
Solidarity forever.
Welcome, one. Welcome, all. Welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It's Thursday, and that means it is office hours with Professor John Shelton. We are talking the UAW strike, which I believe is set for 11:59 p.m. tonight, going into September 14th. And John, before the break, we were touching on some numbers related to inflation and how it's being driven by corporate greed, how some of us have been saying that for years. We were dismissed by the powers that be until all of a sudden places like, oh, I don't know, the Federal Reserve came out and said that, no, this was in fact the main cause of inflation in the United States. And I got some numbers actually from the Kansas City Fed noting that During the first year of the average pre-pandemic recovery, corporate profits contributed more than 100% of overall inflation. More than 100%. On average, contributing 126% to overall inflation, while costs contributed only 26%. Put another way, inflation would have averaged 3.4% if the only contributor had been growth in corporate profits. But the cost reduction actually meant that actual average inflation rate was about 2.7%. And reading over from the LA Times, who noted that since the dawn of the 21st century, wages have gained 82%, while corporate profits have soared by nearly 600% in that time frame. Corporate markups, which is prices over cost, have spiked much, much higher than historical averages. We are seeing this time and time again throughout the United States economy.
Look, here's the thing. I always tell my students this. I'm not very good at math. all of the math stuff that I have to do in terms of grading, I apologize. Hey, I'm not a math person. I can't very quickly be like, okay, something in 1986 was 35 years ago or whatever. I can't do that. But it seems to me that 600% is a heck of a lot more than 82%. Just seems like it's a lot more, like a lot.
I'm not a math guy either, John, but I definitely believe 600 is a bigger number than 82. Don't quote me on that.
I don't know. Some politicians here in Wisconsin are having a hard time knowing the difference between 4 and 3 when it comes to Wisconsin elections commissioners. So there's definitely hurdles that we need to get over. But yeah, the 800% or 600%, excuse me, much greater than that 80%.
Yeah, quite a bit more. So, you know, this is what's frustrating about it. One of the reasons that I think a lot of working people are just turned off by really the entire political discourse in this country, for a lot of reasons. When that's the case, and you can point to something empirically, right, that it's corporate profits that are the reason that we have inflation. And what you get instead from the Federal Reserve is actually what we need to do is induce unemployment. We need to reduce wages, you know, and then you hear things like, no, we can't allow these auto workers to get a wage increase because that's going to cause damage to the economy. What people hear who work for a living is, well, I guess there's really nobody at the national level who understands the fact that I need higher wages and I deserve higher wages, right? Because they're actively saying we've got to suppress those things. And it's the exact wrong lesson. I mean, you know, sure, you can reduce inflation by, you know, throwing a bunch of people out of work. But that's not good for the long-term health of the economy and certainly not good for working people. And they're going to recognize that when they go out and vote. I mean, what needs to happen is tax corporate profits, you know, take affirmative steps to reduce corporate profits and both the economic and political power of millionaires and billionaires in this country. That's the only way to make our economy fair and to save our democracy, honestly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that was proposed throughout the pandemic, when we saw that profits were soaring and that the inflation was becoming a large issue for both here in the United States, but also globally, this wasn't something that was just a one-off in our country. It was a global trend that we saw in countries around the world. And there were proposals, though, to do a profit windfall tax for all of those excess profits. See, and it's a shame that nothing came of that because you can't prove what didn't happen, but it would have been very interesting to see what type of inflation there was if a windfall tax was in place during these periods of increased profit. You're seeing the headlines, 50-year record profit margins for companies. It's pretty insane to also at the same time say to the writers or to the auto workers or to any workers around the country, oh, well, there's no money for increased wages. We can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at Biden's low approval ratings for a second, and they're a huge problem going into the election this year. I mean, people need to realize that. Imagine if he had spent the last couple of years explaining to the American people that inflation was caused by the greed of corporations. I think his approval ratings would be a heck of a lot higher, even if he wasn't able to get anything further out of Congress to actually help with this. You know, because at least people would understand there's somebody in the White House who understood, as somebody wrote to FDR, FDR is the first person in the White House who understands my boss is a son of a I guess I can't say that on the air, even though someone wrote it's FDR. It seems like I should be able to say it, but that's okay. Right? Like, imagine if people understood that Biden got that and could speak to people about that. I guarantee his approval ratings would be a lot higher.
Well, Professor, we've got a number of phone callers that are lining up to ask questions here during office hours. If you've got a question for the professor, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. Let's head over to those phone lines. We've got Greg in Madison calling in. Greg, what is your question for Professor Shelton?
Hi, I'd like the professor to address a couple of points. One is Obama bailed out the big three, and then he sold this as a neoliberal job preservation. I'd like to know where the Democrats are there. Also, part of their demand is for a four-day week, and unions created the eight-hour day. It seems to me this is unions, again, going forward to say, okay, we got all this technology. How come we don't reap some benefits, real benefits, other than having Elon Musk steal our data on X? So that's it. I'll listen to the answer.
Greg, I really like your comments and I want to subscribe to your newsletter. So hit me up. first of all, you know, I think it's hard to see the first couple of years of the Obama administration as anything but a catastrophe for workers. And I'm sorry, but we just have to be honest about that. I know a lot of people deeply like Obama as a person. And, you know, I supported him in the primary in 2008. But did almost nothing for working people. He could have worked with Congress to prioritize car check legislation, which would have really helped workers. If they had that right now, it's quite possible that there'd be a bunch of Amazons across the country that had union representation right now, and a lot more Starbucks that had that. So that's number one. But bailing out the big three automakers and actually. A lot of this two-tiered labor system came out of that, right? Because these auto companies extracted concessions. They got bailed out by the federal government. And instead of the government saying like, okay, we're going to bail you out, but you have to, in the long run, make sure that you're giving your workers a fair shake. What they did is they didn't, I mean, think about the extreme amount of leverage they had. They could have said, you know, you need to redouble your efforts to give workers a fair deal. Instead, they basically allowed these auto companies to extract concessions in the form of two-tiered labor structures, which is what the UAW is fighting against now. So I'm with you 100%. And as often happens with me, I forgot the second point because I was too wrapped up in the first.
I got it, John, because I'm really happy Greg mentioned this. I was going to mention it as well. The 32-hour work week. That's something that I've been a big proponent of. Put your money where your mouth is. Our Wisconsin Revolution have done that. A number of politicians have been, including Bernie Sanders, have been talking about it at the national level. We have seen through case studies in other nations that the 32-hour work week is beneficial. It gives employees the opportunity to live their life outside of work. You don't work to live. You live to work.
Other way around, bud.
Yes. You know, okay. You do not work to live. Or you work to live, you do not live to work. Jesus.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know why I struggled so hard with it, but you got to it.
I got my four tabs up on the 32-hour work week right here that I wanted to cover. reading from Sean Payne himself, from Sean Fain himself, who said, "We need to get back to fighting for a vision of society in which everyone earns family-sustaining wages and everyone has enough free time to enjoy their lives, to see their kids grow up and their parents grow old." This request arrives at a time when a growing roster of companies use a four-day work week, fueling a movement that has accelerated amid a pandemic-era reconsideration of the workforce. We know, because data has shown, that giving employees the opportunity to live their life is beneficial to their productivity when they are in the office, and it is incredibly, incredibly exciting to be able to see someone like Sean Fain in the UAW pushing this type of policy forward.
Yeah, I don't know if I have anything to add. I think I want to just see if Will can work out that work to live metaphor for the next 20 minutes.
We won't make him struggle anymore.
but no, that's exactly right. And the thing I'll add to that, I mean, Will, you said it beautifully. But the thing I'll add to that is the historical piece, which we talked a little bit about last week. 1886, when we got into the history of May Day and Haymarket Square and Bayview. It was unions that were pushing for the 8-hour workday, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours for what we will. It was the labor movement in conjunction with Democrats in Congress in the 1930s that put the 40-hour work week and the principle of overtime into law in 1938 with the Fair Labor Standards Act. And you know, we have all this technology, and we are able to be so much more productive. Why aren't we talking about moving to a 32-hour work week? I think it's super smart for Sean Fain to be thinking about this, and let's make it normal and let's start demanding it.
We covered it last week, John. I mean, productivity has skyrocketed. Wages have not. Rather than technology offering the workers the ability to, produce at the same rate and then enjoy the excess time that technology has created for them, instead they're being forced to produce more and more and more and more while the profits just keep getting funneled up the chain.
Folks, you are listening to Town Call. We are joined by Professor John Shelton on a Thursday for our segment Office Hours with Professor Shelton. If you've got a question for the professor, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. Up next on the phone lines this Thursday afternoon, we got Ken in Fond du Lac calling in. Ken, what is your question for the professor?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm just curious, what is the demand for wage increase? 46%? Is that correct?
Yes, I believe 46% wage increase and a share of company profits. Yes.
Wow.
Can you hear me, Ken?
You think that's reasonable? Yes. You think that's reasonable?
I do. But I'm going to defer to the professor. As we noted, the companies are raking in millions and millions, if not billions, in profits. $21 billion over the first 6 months of 2023 alone means the money is there. These workers are the ones that are creating the value. Our labor is what creates the product that is being sold for profit, and I believe the workers should be getting their fair share of it when clearly the profit is there to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. But I'll defer to you, Professor Shelton.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, my understanding is that 46% is over a number of years.
Of the 4 year contract.
So if that's a little more than 12% a year, right? Again, I'm not a math person. Think about how much
under 12, but
well, but okay. Yeah. A little under 12. I'm not a math person for sure. Think about how much inflation has been the past few years alone. Right. And think about, how much these CEOs have been getting the increases in their compensation. I guarantee you it's more than 46% over the last 4 years.
From inflation totals alone, John, just to give you some context, according to Sean Fain, in inflation adjusted dollars, starting pay today is $10 an hour less than it was in 2007.
Yep, 100%, 100%. And also, you know, keep in mind that these are negotiations. It's highly unlikely that they're going to get a 46% increase over the next 4 years. I think they're absolutely right to be asking for a significant one, as well as all the other things they're asking for. Again, I'll just remind everybody out there that the big thing is pay equity across different classifications of workers, ending the two-tiered labor contract.
Folks, you're listening to Professor John Shelton on Office Hours here on Town Call. Ken, we appreciate your phone call. You can be like Ken, 844-967-2789. We got one more segment left in Office Hours today, so get those phone calls and text messages in. We're going to talk a little fantasy football fun as well here on Town Call across Civic Media.
Solidarity forever.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
93.5, The Tap.
A little patchy fog possible this morning, but that should burn off by mid-morning. Otherwise, mostly sunny today. We'll get to 78 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, 58. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cooler with a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms and a high right around 70. Weekend looking good. Plenty of sunshine Saturday, Sunday with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It's Thursday, and that means it is office hours with Professor John Shelton. Professor, we are talking UAW, the upcoming potential strike as the current four-year contract expires on September 14th, which is tomorrow. And I want to give a shout out. You know, we've been throwing his name around quite a bit, but I'd like to give a shout out to UAW President Sean Fain. You know, we listened to his quote from CNN. I got another quote here from UAW.org. Our union membership is clearly fed up with living paycheck to paycheck while the corporate elite and billionaire class continue to make out like bandits. The big three have been breaking the bank while we have been breaking our backs. Very concise, exactly what we've been trying to convey to you on Town Call. You know, the fruits of our labor should not be funneling up the chain to the ultra-wealthy at the top. UAW President Sean Fain was elected to office in the union's first ever direct election, and he's broken tradition in a number of ways, such as refusing to shake hands with the Big Three CEO prior to bargaining, refusing to bargain the UAW's core economic demands in secret, and choosing to instead publicly announce them to the membership and provide ongoing bargaining updates via social media. As a show that prides itself on transparency and demands transparency from our elected officials, God, this is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it sure is. And beyond just being a breath of fresh air from those on the outside, this is how you effectively run a union. Because a lot of times, I'm the president of my union here at UW Green Bay. And, this is a constant thing that we talk about at our local. You know, oftentimes when you have a union, there's a culture in which, the union is an external entity, right? If I'm being targeted or harassed at work, I'm going to go to the union. If I am having, if I really need a salary increase, I'm going to go to the union and talk to them about doing something about it. And what I always point out to people is, you know, it's the same thing as our is in our political democracy. You know, the government is us, the union is us. The union is us. And the way that you mobilize people and the way that you highlight the power that you actually have is by involving the members, not just getting their consent, but involving them in the decision-making process, right? Because the union is maybe the single most democratic institution that exists in this country in terms of pure democracy, or at least it should be. And so it's really beyond just refreshing, it's important for him to be operating that way. And you look at some of the unions that have been successful in this country recently. I mean, a great example of that is the Chicago Teachers Union and the way that they've had over the past decade, three or maybe four strikes. And in each case, the union leadership doesn't, quickly ask for a ratification vote. They give their members time to actually read each contract before they vote on it because they want to make sure that everybody is not just okay with it, but enthusiastic about it. And that's how you do a union. That's how you have to.
And another update for Hot Labor Summer here. As it's coming to a close, I know school year is in full swing now, and summer is going to be ending in the next, I believe we got a week left. Week left of summer.
Summer's a state of mind. So we got all summer. Year if we need it.
That's fair enough. Oh, well, I'm hoping that hot labor fall will keep going, I guess. We'll have to come up with a better name than that.
Hot labor falls hard because it just makes it seem like climate change is out of control.
Cozy. We'll brainstorm this fall. One. Cozy is a really good fall feeling. So maybe it's that one.
How about pumpkin spice labor fall? How about that?
Don't be giving Starbucks any ideas here. We're trying to help their workers. You're right.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. But there are now talks. One of the longest ongoing strikes currently right now is the writer's strike going on in both the East and West guilds, writers' guilds of America, on strike. We are hearing now that there are going to be shows that are going to return back from strike without their writers. Specifically, we've got the Drew Barrymore show and why can't I think of his show name
Bill
now?
Maher.
Bill Maher's. What is it called though? It's Bill.
Real Time.
Real Time. There we go. Real Time with Bill Maher. Both of those programs now apparently coming back without their writing staffs. Your thoughts on that, Professor Shelton?
Well, I think the Bill Maher show could change its name and call itself Politically Terrible with Bill Maher if they're going to come back with strike breakers.
Well, he referred to it as every segment that had writers. It was like six or seven different segments. He's like, we're not going to come back with those. We're just going to have the panel discussion. And it just sounds like he's going to.
He says, I will honor the spirit of the strike by not doing a monologue, desk piece, new rules, or editorial. The written pieces that I'm so proud of on Real Time.
Yeah, God, so four or five pieces right there. He's just going to do the debate style discussion. It sounds like he's just going to broadcast like a podcast to HBO or wherever that network is that has Real Time.
I don't know. I guess that's better than like using AI to write your content, which, to be honest, some of the more recent Bill Maher shows that I've watched kind of seem like maybe that was happening. I don't know, I think it's still strike breaking. I mean, you've got these writers that are in an existential fight for their livelihoods, and how much money does Bill Maher have? You know, like, you know, show solidarity and basically say like, I can't do this show without my writers, and I support them, and we're off the air until the people in Hollywood raking in billions of dollars understand that they need to be paid fairly for their labor and have a sustainable future. That would be a much better statement than trying to do whatever it is that he's doing.
And they all try to defend themselves on socials. I mean, Drew Barrymore show kicked out fans for wearing WGA pins. It's gross. It's absolutely gross. But we got 2 minutes left, John. So we're gonna jump to our guaranteed production labor lock of the week. We are still working out a potential name. If you have any suggestions, don't hesitate to reach out because we could definitely use one, John. Who is your guaranteed production labor lock of the week for week two?
First of all, the name. I'm going to go with, I think, Ironclad Labor Contract Pick of the Week. That's just a contender, okay? I like it because contracts are inviolable.
That wasn't a good locking sound. I'm trying to find locking sounds. We're working through them.
Right. Here's mine, and I apologize to all the Jets fans who lost Aaron Rodgers. Mine is Breece Hall. I don't know if anybody, how many people watched the Jets actually play after they just turned it off after Rodgers got hurt. But boy, did he look good. And the Jets are going to have to run the ball more because they don't have a functioning quarterback. And Hall, they're going to be tempted to use Hall because he looked incredible and Dalvin Cook looked awful.
He was electric, certainly.
That's not a good locking sound.
That's
either.
Not it either.
We'll come up with
we're,
one.
We're going to workshop it. We'll workshop
All
it.
Right,
Luke,
yours,
who's
Will.
Your labor lock of the week?
Oh, mine is quarterback for the L.A. Chargers, Justin Herbert, going up against Tennessee. L.A. looked good last week, and I think Herbert's going to be doing some damage to that Tennessee defense.
We did not discuss this before the show. Perhaps we should have, because my labor lock of the week is Keenan Allen, wide receiver. For the LA Chargers, Tennessee has been one of the three worst defenses in football defending the wide receiver position going back two seasons.
See,
and,
look, I did my homework, Will. I did my homework. Folks, you've been listening to Town Call. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast.
First time forever.
We'll be back tomorrow at 12:15 for most Wisconsin headlines of the week. Talk to y'all then.
Take it easy, party people.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
If you're ready to welcome fall, the Amory area is the place to celebrate the season during the Flannel and Fire Fall Festival. There's a corn maze, s'mores station, flannel dress-up contest, and the Apple River Quilt Guild Show, too. It's fall-focused and has been for more than 74 years. The Flannel and Fire Fall Festival, Thursday through Sunday, September 14th to the 17th in Amory, picked as one of the 100 best small arts towns in America. More info at AmoryFallFestival.org. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.